Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here looking at, well, we just finished listening to Neil Wood, the publishing director for ITP Executive, giving you some insight into what it takes to make it in the media business. And we had some interesting questions. One from Yasmin, to how do you identify where the power is, where the influencers are in your organization? And so we talked a little bit about that. So if you missed any of that, you can go to our website at dubaii1038.com/iOnCareers and listen to the podcast. And we also have numerous interviews with other CEOs and many rags to riches stories of Dubai sitting right there. So hours and hours of entertainment for you, but also more importantly, they're going to give you a blueprint for success. And speaking of that, we have our next guest now, a banker turned entrepreneur, a man who started his own business in the height of the financial crisis. You think he wouldn't have lived to tell the tale, but he's sitting here with a big smile on his face. His name is Nigel Sillitoe. He's the chief executive officer of Insight Discovery. Let's hear a little bit more about his background.
Nigel Sillitoe is the co-founder and since 2009 the CEO of Insight Discovery, a strategic research business which focuses on emerging markets. ID helps companies to generate insights from their key stakeholders, customers, employees and investors. ID works with international and regional firms across the GCC and Africa. It has been responsible for many high-profile research reports. These have included Beyond End of Service Benefit, Middle East Investment Panorama, and Dubai Expo 2020, a high-stakes event. ID was voted Best Consultancy Firm by Global Investor, part of Euromoney, during October 2014. It was also recently shortlisted by MENA Insurance Review in the category Most Innovative Service Provider. ID has also been recognized as one of the top 50 service providers within the Middle East by MENA FM. Nigel's experience covers research, marketing, media and business development. He is a high-profile speaker on the financial services conference circuit and is a regular contributor to various financial publications. Nigel was recently shortlisted Personality of the Year by Thomson Reuters Middle East and during 2014 joined the advisory board of CISI in the Middle East.
Nigel Sillitoe, Chief Executive Officer of Insight Discovery. Nigel, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane. Thank you for having me.
Amazing. That's quite a bio. I didn't know all that stuff. Personality of the Year.
No. Shortlisted for Personality of the Year.
I don't have to do anything now. You just could sit here.
I was beaten by Farah Fustock.
Okay. Who's that, Farah Fustock?
She's well known in DIFC. She's CEO of Lazard.
Ah, okay. Well, that was a bit tough. But you're up for it next year. Are you going to
I'm not interested.
Is that why you came on? You're going to be like, take more of a media splash?
Well, luckily,
Nigel versus Farah.
Luckily, research does take you into media areas. So that's partly why I quite enjoy my role.
Is that another way into media? That was one of the questions we were asking. You know, like, what is the best way to get into media? And Neil was like, sales. That's how Rupert Murdoch made it. That's how you can make it.
My answer would be do research, then you help get into the media. I think research produces data which actually creates messages which obviously the press then going to be interested in.
It's also funny because on one hand, you know, you have this bipolarism of the industry where, you know, you have people living in their cars and stuff like that or dying penniless in the media business. But then, you know, we found out the first African-American billionaire in the United States of America was Bill Johnson, the founder of BET, the television program there, a whole series he has, was the first one. And then I think when you look at who are the highest paid CEOs in the U.S., I think the CEO of Walt Disney is up there in the top five, you know. And obviously Rupert Murdoch is the tycoon. I don't know how much money. Nobody knows how much money he has. there's still quite a bit of money to be made out there. So this is good advice. You know, research is a way in.
Mm-hmm.
So you're launching a show soon or what?
No,
you're
going to
have
show.
The Insight Discovery. It sounds like a TV show. It could be. Insight Discovery.
It could be. No, we're going to stick to research for now.
You can get the rights to the Magnum PI theme song.
Well, put it this way, if I launch a business like that, you're going to be the first hire.
All right. I would love to do that. But really, tell us a little bit more for people who don't know you as well as I do. What exactly your business does?
Sure. We're a strategic research company, and basically we advise companies on how to engage with their stakeholders. So stakeholders for any company could typically be your employees, your customers, or investors. So we come up with solutions as to how they're going to engage with these key people, and we generate the feedback and a strategy to develop a plan.
That sounds much more exciting than banking. I mean, tell us how you started your career. What were the few things? You were with Bank of New York Mellon,
yes,
right?
Yes, for 10 years.
Which
yep.
is the largest trust administrator in the world.
Correct. Right? That's correct. And one of the largest asset management companies. So I wasn't really on the banking side. It was more asset management.
So that's a big jump. So how did you get into banking, first of all? Because I know a lot of people are really excited to get into that environment. I don't know why, but you know, they just bend over backwards to get in there. How did you get into banking, and what's the story?
Gosh, it was some 30 years back, which probably gives my age away. So I was working for an insurance company. Then I moved to working for a financial advisory firm. And then I was recruited by a bank. And within this bank, they had an asset management company. So I've never really been a banker. It's always working for an asset management company that happens to be owned by a bank, such as NatWest, HSBC, or Bank of New York Mellon more recently.
Interesting. So at what? So you had how long were you a banker for?
Some 20 years.
Is that all?
Yeah.
So most of the time, you know, at that stage, you know, that's it. You're going to continue to go in as a banker. Tell us how you got out of, how did you release the golden shackles?
I was recruited away from banking by a hedge fund company called Thames River Capital. That was in 2009. And I have to confess, there was no headhunter involved. Charlie Porter, the founder of Thames River Capital, is a very good friend of mine, and he's actually godfather to my eldest daughter, and he'd been trying to lure me away from Bank of New York Mellon for many years, and he made me a great offer. So I joined them in 2007 and set up a business for them in DIFC. So that was hedge funds. And what I enjoyed about Thames River, I was going from a very big institution to quite a nimble, flexible, entrepreneurial organization which had only about 140 staff. So for me, it was quite a culture shock, actually, going from an organization, let's say 30,000 employees globally,
wow,
to one of 140. But it was a fantastic experience. But unfortunately, it lasted just 2 years, because then we had the meltdown in 2009.
Ouch. And not a good time to be a small ship.
Correct.
So you took a bit of a battering there.
Yep.
But it's not how many times you get knocked down in life that matters. How many times you get up and you bounced off the ground as if you're made of rubber.
Thank you. So that was when I decided, hey, I need to either go back into asset management. But obviously in 2009, there weren't exactly many great jobs. So I was an investor in a business called Menu Discovery. And basically, I put a bit more capital into it, found some new shareholders, and relaunched it to Insight Discovery, which is a bit more meaningful as a name, because a lot of people thought Menu Discovery is something to do with catering, for example.
Food, like I just get hungry as soon
precisely,
as you say
hey,
it.
Call up Menu Discovery. So
get those little sliders, those
precisely.
Little burger sliders. That
yeah,
was the
precisely.
First thing that just came to me when you said that.
So it's Insight Discovery, and basically, I think as the name implies, we find insights and we make discoveries. So I quite like the brand now, and it seems to go down quite well. But
it's an awesome name.
Thank
it's
you
awesome.
Very much. Thank you. I think it was debated over some drinks one evening, and we now concentrate on research for mainly financial services companies, but for employee engagement, it can be across any sector.
Okay, so you go from, you know, banking to going into doing these insights. Initially, it was engagement surveys.
Yep, correct. That was the main reason for launching the business.
Which is interesting, because I noticed that, you know, just the fact that you're doing the survey before, not even doing anything else, increases engagement right away, because employees feel like, oh, this company cares about me. So before you've even done anything, you've just done the survey, you've already increased engagement.
Correct. And there's one great example, we did a very big study several years back for a firm in Oman. Unfortunately, I can't mention their name, but they employ, let's say, 2,500 employees. And they did the first survey in 2009. And I remember that the employees in Salalah down south were so happy to have been invited to give their views back to senior management. They ran a manufacturing business making furniture. Most of them were actually disabled. So they put all these little wood chippings together, built a cake out of it, and said, "We love XYZ, the company," and sent it to head office. So the response rate, I remember from that study, was something like 84%. The first time they'd actually, in 30 years, engaged with their employees. Whoa. Through a study. Whoa. And they've now repeated it every single year.
30 years.
Yeah.
But isn't that a bit of a stick in the side, though? Like, if I sent you, like, a wooden cake, like...
out of chips.
That's kind of like a slap in the face, isn't it?
No.
Like,
believe me.
Eat this, man. Here.
Believe me.
Here's my leftover wood chips.
Believe me. Head office were
very
touched.
Why don't you have a slice, buddy?
Head office were very touched by it.
No, I'm sure it was... very sweet, and they were like, "Man, how come our furniture doesn't look as good as this cake, man?" but it's amazing that, you know, everything that managers do, they're so concerned with the message they're giving that they almost don't pay any attention to the message that's being received.
That's correct. And often when we pitch to customers for employee engagement, it's amazing how many senior managements just never leave the ivory towers. They stay on the 15th floor. They're not walking around engaging with their staff. So that's why employee engagement is definitely taking off in this part of the world. It's quite new to a lot of companies, and it's amazing how few family offices, for example, currently engage annually, let's say, through an employee engagement study. But it's definitely taking off, and that was one of the reasons why we set up this business in the first place.
Well, if you have that corner office with the view of the palm, though, that you can't blame them. I mean, you know, it's better to just chill there sometimes. No, but I think, too, if a manager hasn't grown up in the business and that they don't know the business inside out, sometimes they create a buffer because they don't want to get caught taking questions that they can't answer or getting caught pushed on the back foot. So sometimes they go as far as having their own elevator. They're completely isolated.
Correct. That's why it's better to hire an independent party who can guarantee confidentiality for anyone actually participates in one of these studies.
Do people believe that, though? People always think that even though it says confidentiality, they're still going to get...
We give that cast iron guarantee, and whenever we're doing a survey, and it's largely online, we keep emphasizing it in a message that pops up every 5 minutes. We guarantee confidentiality. And let's say there are some very poor results to present to the management team, and let's say the CEO is being heavily criticized and he insists to know who's actually been saying XYZ, we will refuse to reveal the identity of the employee.
Really?
Yeah, refuse.
Wow. That's pretty good. Well, that's good. That's a cast iron guarantee. You can't get better than that. But then you moved out of that, right? Well, you still do
employee engagement. Yeah, we do employee engagement. So that's the bread and butter, if you like. And it's fun, particularly when you're producing the results for a management team. Their jaws drop when they actually find out maybe they're not as popular or the strategy is not as successful as they think. So employee engagement's one cornerstone. The other thing we do is... customer research, and that's more specifically for financial services companies, but more recently we've been hired by quite a few hospitality and hotel businesses. I love hotels, I love food, so I'm not restricting myself just to financial services, which is what I know best. We're now covering hospitality and hotels as well. So that's for customer research.
This is Nigel Sillitoe, the Chief Executive Officer of Insight Discovery, telling you it's not what you're saying, it's what they're hearing that counts. More from him in just a minute.
This is Eye on Careers, keeping an eye on your career.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Nigel Sillitoe, the Chief Executive Officer of Insight Discovery. Nigel, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So we were just looking at a few things that you're saying. A good way in the media is doing research. You also talked, for those who are just joining us, Nigel talked about how he made the switch from being in a behemoth of an organization like Bank of New York Mellon to starting his own business in the height of the crisis. Great timing for him, but it has worked out well. Insight Discovery does employee engagement surveys as well as brand awareness. What do you call those things when you...
Call it customer research, which will help drive brand awareness through the media.
Oh, okay. So I was almost as close.
Yeah.
I was
we produce close. Reports that will help the media.
Okay. So what kind of... have you done any kind of surveys or reports that raise an eyebrow lately?
Yeah, sure. I prefer producing quite edgy reports, to be honest. So we've done ones on Expo, what are the implications? And that sticks in my mind because it was launched on the evening that Dubai won Expo 2020. We did it in conjunction with Thomson Reuters. I think we had 1,000 people responding within 2 weeks. So that was a really interesting project. And that was... an example, I think, of how nimble and innovative you have to be, because the contracts with our clients were signed before Dubai even knew it was going to win Expo. The chances were very high, of course, but we managed to launch this project within hours of the announcement. So that's a great project. Another one was payment of invoices, which is a serious issue for a lot of SMEs in this part of the world. So the payment of invoices is something we're currently conducting, and there are some interesting results. And what I love about this particular project is it's going to, when it's published, help SMEs to determine what they can do if a company owes them money after, let's say, 30 days, 60 days,
you
or even 90
days. You can do something?
Days. Yeah, there are actually
options. What do you do?
Well, I've had experiences with this myself. So you've got one of a couple of options. Obviously, you can go to the reception area of the client to make a fuss. And seriously,
I was thinking that, but I didn't think you were going to say that. That's like an actual option in the Middle East.
Yeah, I promise you, it's an option. And in the study we're conducting amongst SMEs, I think something like 70% will actually choose that or contact the most senior executive they can. So it's either chasing the most senior executive or seriously going to the lobby and making a fuss. But in all, to explain the real actions you can take besides that, obviously you can go through the courts, but that's going to be slow and maybe quite expensive. There are lawyers who specialize in this, but more importantly, there are actually some debt collection agencies that are licensed here in the UAE. So that was quite a surprise to me. Yeah, I already interviewed a couple of them, and obviously,
what were they like?
They're very professional ones in JLT. And I know where you're going.
Jail. I thought that's what you just said.
No. They're professional debt collection agencies. They're licensed, and they will obviously take, let's say, 10% fee.
And two fingers.
And then the other option, which most people aren't aware of, is you can always put a police case against someone. So if you've got enough evidence, you can actually stop somebody from leaving the country or entering if they've already left. So there are various options available.
Well, that's not too bad. I think, though, if you're an SME, your invoice is probably going to cost more than the court fees.
Correct.
So it's kind of moot.
Yeah, but it is a serious issue here, not just in the UAE, but generally in the GCC. And I've met enough SME institutes to appreciate just what a big issue this is becoming. And there isn't, for example, a small claims court like you might have in the UK. So if you talk to the owners of SMEs, some of them jokingly say, I might as well change my title from CEO to head of debt collection, because they're spending so much time actually on this issue.
Yeah, but is it also that, or is it also that their service is just so bad, people don't want to pay?
It could be that.
It could be that.
And there will be some companies who say, well, the invoice you sent wasn't correctly filled in, and you know, sent to the wrong address. So obviously lots of excuses can be used, but I've spoken to enough SMEs to realize that it is basically their number one challenge, that plus cash flow.
But you know, I think also service is so bad. I mean, generally, if you get serviced well, you're happy to pay your invoice. You know, there is the game where people want to drag out, you know, for working capital purposes, they want to drag the payment out a bit. But isn't there a little bit more to the story that generally if someone is to the point where they're saying, I need to change my title to, they probably have horrible customer service.
Yeah. Or they might just be in the wrong sector. You know, let's say it's construction where, you know, it's sector to work in. Yeah, when it comes to payments.
Yeah, I don't know about that sector. So maybe that's maybe I'm lucky. I am actually quite lucky. So, so that was one interesting. Were there any other interesting studies?
Yeah, we've done quite a few amongst financial advisors, and I know financial advisors sometimes get a pretty bad rap in this part of the world, and in actual fact, in many parts of the world, but there's far more legislation being introduced, and as you mentioned at the beginning, I'm involved with an association called CISI, which is looking to improve the professional qualifications of financial advisors in the Middle East. So I've definitely seen a big improvement from the time I moved in 15 years back, where there were very few financial advisors. The advice was pretty poor, but now there are thousands of financial advisors here in UAE, and yeah, still, you know, they don't get a particularly good press, but they are taking regulation far more seriously, and they are looking to be trained. So hopefully the advice given to consumers will keep improving.
Is that where we're at? Is that the financial advisors have decided they should be trained? They've agreed to that. That's the progress we made.
There are a lot of CEOs running. There are a lot of CEOs running these firms who are insisting that their staff take minimum qualifications, and it's a worldwide phenomenon.
That's a good.
It's the same
thing
in South Africa, yeah, where I go occasionally. Same in Asia. So the professional standards are definitely rising.
You know what's interesting, though? You know, people who, you know, especially if you run your own business, if you're giving your money to a financial advisor, basically what you're saying is you have more confidence that someone else will make a profit than you do in yourself. So in fact, you know, you should be investing in yourself, not in someone else, potentially. Could be the biggest payout. I mean, it worked for Richard Branson.
Okay, yeah, but he's an exception.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's dyslexic. That's why. Of course. But so these are some of the things you do when you do the studies, and then you also do that thing where you bring people in a room and you have the two-way mirror glass,
focus groups.
FBI stuff.
Yeah. They're fun, actually, and I can't reveal the name of the client, but it's a well-known international hotel chain. And we interviewed people in the trade, the travel agents, but also customers. And it was to try and gauge people's reaction to this brand, but also about Rack, because Rack's now quite a popular holiday destination. So this hotel chain wanted
really to understand. Really narrowing it down. It's becoming thinly veiled here as we go through this.
This hotel chain wanted to understand more about Rack and what the attraction was or what wasn't the attraction. So that was really interesting. And you're right, the two-way mirrors make it quite fun with the customer sitting in the room next door. And then we do these other things, which we grandly call leadership roundtables, which again is like a focus group. We put 6 to 8 executives in a room. We debate the topic like beyond end of service benefits or what are the issues challenging facing SMEs. And then we'll produce a report with case studies, and that will be issued to the media, and that will help my client get the debate stirred up in the press.
Wow. Okay. So that's quite exciting stuff. So it sounds like you actually have a fun job.
Yeah, it's fun. It's not always rewarding, but luckily I've now attracted a couple of retainers, and I think that's the way forward. You've got to, with cash flow being so variable, you need a couple of retainers to give you that base. So the other thing we now do is consultancy work for mainly asset management companies, where we might be the external advisor on sales, marketing, and media, for example. So, you know, that's the way forward. Employee engagement, customer research, and then retainers for a couple of clients.
This is always, you know, I was speaking with Issan Jawad, and I think who's the founder of Zalu.com and LeMoon.com, and he's got so many. He's serial entrepreneur.com, smart guy, went to Imperial College and stuff like this. But anyway, you know, we're sitting there, and you know, it was like this guy had just gotten a big investment, not Issan, but someone else we were talking about. I was like, wow, the guy's so lucky, you know, he's got this huge cash, and, you know, he gets to do his business idea. And then Issan's like, it could be as much as a curse, because, you know, when you have a cash given you have big cash reserves, you don't get the opportunity to find your revenue stream. And, you know, that's really what, you know, you were saying there, is that you started out saying, you know, we're going to make money doing engagement surveys. And, you know, 4 or 5 years later, you know, you found a completely different revenue stream.
Correct.
How important is that process to the entrepreneur to actually, you know, be living on mac and cheese, to kind of say, where is the money in this business? Where is the money in this industry? How important is that process?
No, it's very important. So, for example, we started off doing employee engagement. And then, you know, we hit some rough times. I think it was in 2011. So that led us to do customer research, particularly in financial services, because that's my background. And then one evening we had this idea about, hey, let's do a kind of elevated version of a focus group where we'll call it leadership roundtables. And we've managed to get some big celebrities like Michelle Carnu from the Carnu Group to participate to debate a subject that was on succession planning from memory. And then we'll produce a white paper branded by the clients, and they use that as their marketing document. So that kind of appeared in 2012, and we do one every 3 months or so. And now more recently, we're doing this consultancy work. So you keep having to evolve and look at new revenue streams, but the way forward is definitely retainers, which I know, you know, any executive search wants as well, you know, retained versus contingency. For me, you know, I need more retained work, not just rely on projects which, you know, come and go. So retainers are definitely the way forward, but they're not easy to come across.
Right, and it's interesting. I mean, what you're really talking about here is content creation, how important it is in today's market for clients to create content, to start create thought leadership. And I think this also works for anyone listening out there. If you're having trouble finding a job, you can do the same thing Nigel's talking about. Call up 3-4, you know, CEOs on a topic that's relevant to your position. If it's HR, succession planning, performance management, if it's finance, it could be working capital, it could be growth, debt financing, and then get their points across, create a white paper, get a graphic designer to clean it out, and send that out instead of your CV. Your CV is obsolete. Your CV is not going to work. But this white paper is going to get a response.
And you've hit it on the nail. Besides the content, it's finding a good designer. So I've got two cracking designers I use, one in South Africa and one in Brighton. They're both freelance, and what they can do is create amazing reports. And I'm happy to pay
money.
I want
to need them.
I'll give you their details later. But the visual effects for any report are so important.
Design is so important. Everything is about design now. You know, you go on the website, you know, what's your touch point for your brand? How is it going to feel? What's it's going to look like? They're saying now, in the future, the smartest person in the company is going to be the designer. Because the back office becomes the front office. People are going to be going, buying online. So that's going to be the interface of your brand, is going to be through your designer. So they're saying now that the equity for fine arts, as we move in the second half of the century, should start to see some growth, which it hasn't seen in a long century. You know, the fine arts degrees are generally like getting a degree in welfare, but now they're going to shoot through the roof, apparently, as we move forward. I don't know if you heard anything like that, or you're just looking at me strangely.
Right? I'm just thinking, when's the break? I'm thirsty. I need a drink of water.
He needs a drink. Okay, everybody, Nigel needs a drink of water. We're going to be right back. This is Ion Careers and Murals. Shane Phillips, listening to Nigel Sillitoe, the Chief Executive Officer of Insight Discovery.
This is Eye on Careers, keeping an eye on your career.
Welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are here with Nigel Sillitoe, the Chief Executive Officer of Insight Discovery. Nigel, welcome to Ion Careers.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And for those just joining us, Nigel, Insight Discovery, the business that Nigel runs, runs employee engagement surveys. They do market research. And what was the third? There was three things, right?
Leadership roundtables.
Leadership roundtables. Someone, if you want to have a touch point for your brand internally, externally, or otherwise, which online, however it is, he can figure out what the buzz is about your brand, what people are saying about you behind your back. You can figure it out. Now we have a, you know, and basically why people do this is to drive peak performance in their organization, in their teams. And so that's kind of, you know, what we're also looking at. And to help us along here with the discussion, we have Chris Macklin from the United Kingdom, an HR guru, former employee of Emirates NBD and Q Invest, and now is a freelance HR consultant. Chris, are you there? Hello?
Program. Good evening.
Good evening, Chris. Did I pronounce your last name right? Macklin, is it?
Yeah, Macklin's fine, yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, excuse the Canadian accent. I know that not to be, you know, I know that drives the British people crazy sometimes. But
across fine. That's
you're
fine.
Okay with it? Okay, good.
Yeah, sure.
So thanks so much for calling in.
Pleasure.
And so you deal with a lot of this engagement. Does this stuff actually deliver bottom line results? You know, the stuff that we're looking at that Nigel's talking about here. Is it important to get that level of engagement if we want to increase our profit margin, or is this just esoteric, fluffy, touchy feely leadership talk?
No, I think it's very effective in driving bottom line performance. I mean, basically.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're missing you up there.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Sorry, I think it sounded like you fell down the stairs in the middle of it.
No, I'm still here.
Okay.
You know, often in the HR space, what really needs to be done to drive performance can very effectively be surfaced through the kinds of employee engagement studies that Nigel operates, and that's why we've collaborated in that kind of way. So, you know, the study... just to answer your question, the studies that we operate generate a lot of analysis on what employees are really thinking, what motivates them, what demotivates them, you know, about the company, their job, their boss, the leadership team, the communication of the firm, and a whole lot more, actually. And what that does, when we get that information, that feedback, and we analyze it, it gives us a really good indicator on where the company needs to focus its efforts to drive up motivation. You know, what's turning people on in the firm, what's really holding them back and demotivating them, and that's a really good map to build an HR agenda, and that's what we do. You know, so some of the outputs that we get allow us to create a good action plan for the HR team to work with management on, and it's, you know, about the areas such as, you know, how can we make performance management more rigorous, more commercially focused? How can we make it more meritocratic so people really feel that the performance management process is recognizing what they do and rewarding them for it? How can we, you know, spot high potential talent in the organization and then, very importantly, you know, make sure that they get developed and get planned into succession and locked into the firm? Or perhaps how do we get the compensation design structured in a way that's robust and that's linked to what people contribute and locks quality people into the firm longer term? So I think the message is the surveys really do allow the management team to focus in on where work needs to be done to drive up motivation. So it's very effective. And, of course, the more connected people are to the firm, the more they're clear about where the firm's going, you know, their role in the contribution they can make to the firm, the more they're motivated to do that. So I think it's a very commercially focused exercise that really does contribute to the bottom line, sure.
So what are the key elements that you think a CEO needs to have or an organization needs to have in order to drive peak performance within that organization?
Well, I think, you know, it comes, I think to a certain extent it comes down to, you know, leadership and people, the way that people do lead in the firm. So, you know, a good leader will set out clear direction, a clear message about where the company wants to get to long term. What does this firm need to look like in the longer term? The business plan to get to that point, a clear agenda for every individual in the firm so that they understand clearly what they have to contribute to achieve that business plan and realize the strategy.
Sure. You know, I think we have a really bad line here, Chris. I don't know if you're on a mobile or something, but it's really cracking up.
Right. It's a landline. I could hear you very well, actually.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I don't know what it is. So,
do you want to try and continue?
Well, maybe just give us the short verse. So, it's a vision, having it clearly articulated. What were some of the other key elements? Yeah, we're just not getting you at all there. So why don't we try this another time? But I do want to thank you for taking the time to call in. Unfortunately, we're just having a bad line here. It's Chris Macklin, one of the HR gurus who services the region here. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks for trying, Chris.
Sorry, it didn't work out.
No worries. Bye-bye. Okay, bye. That's too bad.
Yeah.
We had an intellectual. He was trying to share some of his drops of his fountain of knowledge with us, and didn't make it across.
Technology
failure to communicate here. But just to remind everyone, we do have a competition here, and I think I have stumped the audience. I don't think anyone could really figure out the song which I had here. And this is it. I love this song, man. Isn't this great? Ever heard anything like that before?
Never.
That is amazing, isn't it? No, that's true creative. Okay, so if you know what that song is, SMS is at 4001, and you win a free executive coaching session. Get your career on some high octane. So what we're talking about there is looking at how we're going to drive peak performance within the organization. And, you know, I think, you know, what Chris was talking about was a lot of the mechanics, vision, direction, having proper KPIs, what people are measured against, what they're thinking. But at the end of the day, a lot of the CEOs just feel, even if I put in the balanced scorecard, I pull all these systems in, it's actually not going to make a difference. It's just, you know, people will game the system, or it just means that they're going to be measured a slightly different way. But again, you know, they're going to adapt to that, and we're not necessarily going to move the speed of the herd here. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that.
Yeah, no, I'm fortunate. I totally agree.
I totally agree. So how do we get around this? I mean, at the end of the day, you really need to get people to take ownership of these ideas.
Yeah, and also empowerment, which is often lacking in this part of the world. A lot of people I meet are simply not empowered. They might have a big title and a big role, but they're not empowered. So I think a lot of the CEOs need to consider actually empowering a lot of their staff.
So that's the main thing, is empowering them. But what about the ownership piece? I mean, you know, historically we've created strategy behind closed doors with our, you know, genius C-suite executives who have big degrees and access to data that nobody else in the company has access to. And then they roll out the strategy and expect it to work. Do you think that we're going to see some changes in how that works? I think we've actually seen now for the first time open source strategy. They've actually had, they actually have websites where companies can post their business problems and you can bid on it. Mm-hmm. And the person who wins gets whatever that, whatever they say it's worth. And some companies actually put their strategy, hey, we want to open across Africa with our blue widgets. What do you think the best one is? Best strategy wins the $50,000 or whatever. So now all of a sudden you have, you know, people with no business degree being able to participate in the sophisticated strategic pitch. That's a game changer.
Yeah, and also a lot more companies are hiring internal comms people. And I think that's the main criticism in these employee engagement studies, that the communication is very poor internally. That's always a big red in any study we conduct. So I think a lot of companies are now looking to actually be better when it comes to communicating internally. And when we do an employee engagement study, the first thing we insist is that they actually communicate the results of the study to all employees. They don't just, you know, select a small number and share it. It's got to be across the whole board. What's the point in otherwise doing it?
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of them choose just to the top managers to release it to.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
That's weird. So do you get in a lot of fights with the CEOs about, you know, first of all, not telling them who wants to slash their tires? And
well,
then second,
let's say if the results are very poor, sometimes the results put in a top drawer and no one sees them, which is a shame, and then we'll never be hired again. And that does happen because some companies over here just want to do it to tick a box because, you know, in some countries, you know, it's kind of forced upon people now to do employee engagement. So we'd rather work with companies which actually take it seriously. Mm. We'll look at our action plans that someone like Chris Macklin will assist with and actually roll out the results to all employees. Or let's say have a town hall meeting where we've been invited in to actually present the results, whether they be good or bad. So I'd much rather work with companies that are very open with their employees and actually will share the results.
Hmm. Yeah, I did a little survey in mine. I found out that my team hates my website.
Right.
To the point that they find it embarrassing.
Okay. That's what it is. I think we'll do some research on your website and get some...
I'm changing it. Okay. I've got it all changed. I'm using a plug, actually, is the name of the company. So they're fixing it for me. So,
okay, good.
So, halas with that. Coming up, we're going to find out, what does Nigel look for when he's hiring? What does he think those peak performing engaged employees look like? What are their traits? How does he identify them? How can you pass an interview with Mr. Nigel Sillitoe, the Chief Executive Officer of Insight Discovery?
This is Eye on Careers, keeping an eye on your career.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to the Chief Executive Officer of Insight Discovery, Nigel Sillitoe, a man who switched from being a banker in New York, Bank of New York Mellon, and then started to become an entrepreneur, took the jump out of the institution into the small boat, running his own ship on the high seas. And now he's sailing into the sunsets. Nigel, welcome back to Iron Careers.
Thank you very much, Shane.
So so you've been an employee. Now you're an employer.
Yep.
What do you look for, you know, when you look at, you know, identifying a top performer? What are you looking for when you interview those key people that are going to help take your business to the next level?
Sure. Well, obviously, it helps if they've got experience in research or financial services, and someone who hasn't jumped around too much. I've seen too many CVs where people are moving literally every 12 months to 18 months, which certainly worries me. And I think the biggest shock is always that if someone's being interviewed, they haven't even bothered checking out me. I've got a LinkedIn profile, of course.
They want you to check you out. this
funny.
Person didn't check me out at all.
Well, they should at least check out my profile. They should know a bit about Insight Discovery. Go to our website. And it still amazes me how little research people do prior to an interview.
No, I think that's a great point. I mean, but I think it's more pervasive than just an interview. I mean, people just aren't doing their research, you know, at all. You know, people who are in industry and you have a job, one of the biggest defining factors between an underperformer and the top performer, overperformer, in my humble opinion, is intellectual curiosity. You know, you talk to one of the top bankers or one of the top people in market research, and you ask them who the top players are. You ask them what their strategies are, what their P&Ls look like, you know, who's the fastest growing profit, who has the fastest growing market share, who's winning, who's shrinking. They can answer all those questions. They know who the players are. And then you have the underperformers like, oh, I don't really know. I work in my silo, and I that's a real quick benchmark that, you know, generally the bottom line is people don't like reading.
Yeah, no, you're right. And naturally, when I go on the metro and no one's reading any newspapers, or they're not reading anything on their iPad, it's amazing.
The Kinder.
Yeah, no, they're not.
What happened with the Kinder? Is that still going or what?
I think so, yeah.
You know, you could have thousands of books in the palm of your hand.
Yeah. But people are lacking data often. They haven't got the data they can actually throw at someone if they're being interviewed.
Right. I think, well, that's one of the key things now is knowledge management, right?
Yep.
Is that you have all this access to data, but what are you going to do with it? That's the key question. I don't know anyone knows the answer to that.
I certainly don't. But all I know is that in my role, we loved coming up with numbers, hard numbers, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to find information that is difficult to access. But if you interview enough people, you'll get that data, or you will have guesstimates.
Guesstimates, right. Okay. So we should check you out, come to the table with some hard numbers. Any other key tips of getting through an interview with you?
No, but I'm going to be very direct with people, and I don't want to rattle them, but I just want to test them on what they've actually achieved. And people tend to exaggerate their success, like, hey, I've raised you know, X billion dollars if it's related to asset management.
That's how I do it.
Yeah, people tend to exaggerate, and then, you know, people rarely actually do checks on whether this is actually true or not.
Right, right. Well, the other thing is, in terms of doing, you know, I think it's hilarious that someone will show up to a research interview and not do their research. Yeah. That's got to be the worst.
Yeah,
right?
It is pretty bad. It's pretty bad. But it's a common theme, I think. It's not just, really? You know.
I think one of the things is people who are not accountants are scared of annual reports. And the huge amount of information that lies in finding a comparable company, or if you look at the top 10 research companies in the world, I'm sure at least half of them are publicly traded. Those annual reports, for anyone listening to me out here right now, one of the top things you can do for your career is look at your competitors, or if you're going for a job interview, look at the annual reports of the company you're interviewing for and the competitors. And here's a newsflash: annual reports are not written for accountants. They're written for pedestrian investors who can understand this. There's lots of pictures. There's lots of graphs. And if you look at the investor presentation, they actually will have the competitors listed there in 8 or 9, 10 slides summarizing the entire industry and all the key facts and figures you need to ace your interview. That's got to be the best tip in the last 2 hours that this show has been on. That would be the simplest way to get an edge.
Yeah.
And it's so funny that people just won't do it.
Yeah. And also follow up. You know, once you've had the interview, actually send an email thanking the person.
I think the handwritten note is died out for some reason, but that's a great advantage. Send you a handwritten note, email and the handwritten note.
Yeah, but if you send a handwritten note here, it'll probably never arrive at the postal system.
Oh. But you have to use a courier, and then you should send some food things as well, like chocolates.
No, that might be taking it too far.
Is it? You think so?
I think so.
But what if it's a business related thing, like here's a DVD of, you know, the, you know, some kind of like inside job or something, like some business related documentary or film.
Yeah. Now, what I would do in all seriousness, when I was working in asset management, if we were interviewing people, we would get them to actually present a product or a strategy, not just to me, but to a couple of us. So it was like five people being presented to by the candidate. And I think that really does put them under pressure and makes them prepare for a pitch on a particular product. And I'm
What's
amazed.
That? What is
well,
it?
you just get the person to actually prepare a pitch. You know, this is the candidate. So when they've got through the first interview, you actually get to test them on their ability, if it's a sales or marketing role, to actually present one of the company's products. And very few companies actually seem to bother to do that.
One of the things that my pet peeve is that a lot of people don't write well. You know, and a big part of a consultant's job is writing the report to the client or you know. But it would be kind of rude, isn't it? Like in an interview to be like, write me an essay. Like, you can't do that, can you? Or like, so how do you test someone's writing skills?
Yeah, difficult.
You can't. You just got to pray that you do it. So case studies, another good option for the for you think that people should employ.
Yeah, for sure.
In the selection process. So one is being well researched, having a good level of intellectual curiosity, having knowledge about the players, the competitive strategies of the market, where the market's moving, have some insight. I think that also shows a spark, right? Like, you know, make a prediction on what the next 5 years of the business is going to be like. You know, what will the research market in the Middle East be like 5 years from now?
Yeah.
Let's hear some theories on that. You know, that would be exciting.
Sure.
Rather than just being flat.
But also thinking out of the box. You know, I've got a great girl, Sudha, who's always thinking out of the box, looking at new opportunities, forever emailing me about, have we thought about this? So I love people who are forever being curious and looking at ways of expanding the business.
Be curious. I think that's a great thing. But people just aren't, you know, they're just looking for a job. And that's not enough in the most competitive job market in the world. I mean, the whole world applies for jobs here in the Middle East. And so if you're just coming to the table, showing up, it's just not going to cut it. You got to have that extra piece of depth to you.
Yeah, definitely.
Moving forward. What's your piece of advice for anybody who wants to be successful in making the jump from an institution to starting your own business like you have? I mean, very few people successfully make that jump. What's your advice to someone?
Yeah, well, everyone talks about being passionate, which clearly you need to be. But I think you've got to be innovative. You've got to be always thinking ahead, okay, if this doesn't work, what else can you do? And I've been running Insight Discovery for 5 years now. We're forever reinventing ourselves and coming up with new strategies and products that we can market, but all research related. And being incredibly persistent and a great networker. You have to network all the time in this city.
Is that just as an excuse for staying out
late?
No,
no, believe me, no.
I have to do this.
I thoroughly enjoy. Business. I thoroughly enjoy the networking. You never know who you might meet, and I find it very effective.
Well, that's just it, right? You do business with people you like.
Yeah, correct.
You know, that's the bottom line. So you do have to get away from the desk, and I think you see that too. Sometimes people can get stuck behind the desk, and you got to mix it up. You know, you have to get out there. I agree. Dubai is the greatest city for that, though.
Correct. And you can get to meet very senior people, so that's the beauty of Dubai. You can access very influential individuals.
This city is like the game changer city. This is it. Get your dream on. With Nigel Sillitoe. Okay, well, Nigel, thank you so much. It was a pleasure hearing from you.
My pleasure, Shane. It's been great fun. Thank you.
And unfortunately, we couldn't get your friend Chris on, but hopefully next time.
Definitely.
And hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Love to. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. That was Nigel Sillitoe, the Chief Executive Officer of Insight Discovery, a company that specializes in employee engagement, roundtable discussions, and market research, really finding out what people are saying and thinking about your brand externally or internally. Insight Discovery is the company that makes it happen. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, hoping the rest of your life is the best of your life. That's it for this episode of Eye on Careers.